You're on the record.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to November 28th, ADA board meeting. It's 8:30, and I'll ask Bryn to call the board members.
Deputy Commissioner Paraday. Mr. Mitchell.
Here.
Mr. Castle.
Here.
Mr. Carl.
Here.
Ms. Brown.
Here.
Mr. Beadle.
Here.
Mr. Pruse.
Here.
You have quorum.
Thank you. And is Fred coming?
He is on a plane right now and will be arriving a little late from what I've been told.
Okay. All right. Would you continue with the staff and public, please?
Okay. Start here at the table.
John Springsteen, ADA.
Back corner.
Nancy Wainwright.
Karsten Rodvik, ADA.
Elizabeth Beer, ADA.
Mark Gardner, BFM.
Sunny Morris, the McIntyre.
Rich Wooden, ADA.
Yule Ellsworth, ADA.
Jamie Sudbeck, ADA.
Linda Dunn, ADA.
Sherry Severson, ADA.
Chris Anderson, ADA.
Brenda Applegate, ADA.
Jerry Judet, Department of Law.
Al Moister, ADA.
Frank Kempinen, ADA. Do we have any public on the phone?
Yes.
Excuse me, who was that from Kobuk?
Edward Gooden.
Edward Gooden, you said?
Yes.
Okay, who else is on the phone?
John Gage, Fairbanks.
The Fairbanks one, John who?
Gage.
Okay. And who's next?
Shannon Donahue from Haines.
Any other person on the phone? Sounds like that's it.
Thank you, Fran. I'd like to welcome our new board members, Joe, Carl, and our stand-in, Devin. Welcome to ADA. Appreciate your service and looking forward to working with you today and in the future. With that, we have an agenda in front of us, and I'll take a motion for approval.
So moved.
Seconded.
Does anybody have any additions, deletions, changes before we go with it? All right, hearing none, I'll call the agenda approved. Next up is public comments. I'll remind everybody that 3 minutes per person. Please state your name and your affiliation so we can put that on the record. And I'll start online, on telephone. Is there anybody on the telephone that would wish to make a public comment this morning?
This is Shannon Donahue. I'd like to make a comment.
Go ahead, Shannon. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Shannon Donahue. I'm a community member of Haines, Alaska. And it's come to my attention that Constantine Metal Resources has talked about coming to ADA for bonds to cover the cost of an ore loading facility for their proposed sulfide mine during the Chilkat Valley near Haines and Buckhorn. I just wanted to let you know that there is significant community opposition as this mine would pose a real danger to our salmon stocks that we rely on for all sorts of uses. So I'm asking you to please not finance that project.
Okay. Any questions from the board for Sharon? Thank you, Sharon. Is anybody else online wishing to make a comment?
Yeah, this is John Gaedeke.
Go ahead, John.
Good morning. My name is John Gaedeke, and I'm chairman of the Brooks Range Council out of Fairbanks, and I'm calling to voice continued concern over ADA's handling of the Ambler Road EIS. I spend about 6 months of the year at Hinnikuk Lake Wilderness Lodge, a few miles from the proposed road site where my family started the Wilderness Lodge in 1974. And I also spend a lot of time talking with the villagers in the region. The proposal of a road through the Brooks Range has caused a lot of stress in the region, and the board may be unaware of the number of resolutions against the road, and they may also be unaware of the promises made regarding the EIS process in the villages at meetings. We were told it would be thorough and exhaustive and exploring the cumulative effects to the land and animals and economy. And in my phone calls to federal agencies over the past 6 months or so, I've really been met with a lot of questions. My understanding is that from the federal agencies, it sounds like ADA has not fully funded the EIS. And then yesterday I see a press release from the governor that $3.6 million will be released. So that seems to support what I was hearing. So I'm just hoping that this 3.6 goes to fully vetting this EIS. Ada's message in the meetings has been that this project will not cost the state any money, so it seems odd that there's this state appropriation that was asked for when it's more state money that supposedly Ada doesn't need. We're also reading about some sort of Mustang project where Ada is giving loans to companies it owns. So this doesn't sound right to those of us in the region developing the local resources without corporate welfare. We see Ada down in Trilogy land in the same charter, and it just doesn't look right. How is this project being objectively vetted? And we'd like to at least see an EIS process that looks at the cumulative effects of this road proposal. And we're being told it's a road EIS and will not take into account the effects of the mines it would enable. And we're also hearing that there will be an arbitrary page limit to the EIS. It doesn't sound very thorough to us. And in looking at crude prices in the state economy, we're not seeing the sudden enthusiasm that has supposedly encouraged the governor to release additional funding. To the people in the Brooks Range, a 220-mile road sounds like more than Ada will be able to handle. And we encourage Ada to look at lower-hanging fruit. This seems like a poisonous apple.
Thank you, John. Any questions from the board?
Yeah. John, are you totally opposed to this? I mean, 100% opposed where there's no common ground, where you see any good at all coming out of this?
What exactly?
The mine. I'm talking about, you know, the road's going to the mine, so I'm talking about the mine itself. The road is one item. You can be opposed to that, but without the road, there's no mine. So my question to you is that, are you totally opposed to this mine, no matter what science proves, no matter what economic value that has for the communities in the area? I mean, is there any common ground at all that you see?
Yeah, I mean, to tell you the truth, I haven't looked into the mine that much. Like I said, I mostly called today to talk about the EIS process with the road. It sounds like the Red Dog mine has worked well for the region, and so if there are mine proposals in the AMBA region that would be similar to that, that sounds good. It sounds like there's only one junior mining company looking into it so far. Like I said, I'm not a miner. I haven't done research into that, but it seems like Red Dog is a very well-funded mine by a major corporation, and what little I have looked into, it sounds like Red Dog has potential interest in the AMBA region, but they have potential leases or claims, but have done nothing. So that also kind of speaks to me. If the big dogs aren't biting, why are we feeding the little dogs?
Well, you can be assured that just from this board member's viewpoint, from Bernie Carl's viewpoint, I'm not for any mines in the state, and I'm not against any of them. If the due process is done and they can get the permits and they can get it by the state agencies and the federal agencies, then there's probably a good chance that I would be for it. But if they can't do that, you can be assured I'll be against it. And that goes the same with the road. If it doesn't have a good reason to be there and it doesn't pass the EIS, then you can be assured you'd have a vote here that would be against it. So. I can share your. I appreciate the time that you put in talking to us, because I know it's coming from your heart.
Yeah, thanks. Like I said, from our point of view, the optics have been pretty strange until now. In talking to federal agencies, it sounded like things were kind of on pause here for the last few months, and then this sudden allocation of funds sort of seems to lend credence to my fears. But the EIS process was kind of stumbling.
I would think that you would want a good, competent EIS done, because if there's going to be a mine, it would seem to me that you would want to see this done, and you would be as helpful as you could be to see to that it gets done properly and addresses all your issues and all the village's issues.
Yes, that's exactly my call. In my research of EIS, it sounds like it's looking only at the road, and the road, as you pointed out, is to support a mine. So how is an EIS process that myopically looks only at the road but not the impact of a mine, a thorough EIS? I mean, that is exactly what I'm bringing up to the board here, and to make this as thorough and as vetted as possible.
Thank you.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Bernie. Anybody else online wishing to make a comment? Anybody else? All right, going online, I'll go to the boardroom. Is anybody in the boardroom wishing to make a comment?
Sure.
Come on up. Welcome back.
Thank you. Morning. My name is Nancy Wainwright, and some of you who were here may recall that for about 3 years, members of the public, including myself, have asked Ada for cost information about the Ambler Road project, both for the cost of the road, the cost of the EIS. And I'm very grateful because Mr. Davis of Ada responded to our request in July. And there are a number of matters in his letter that I'd like to address, but today I only want to talk about the EIS costs. The total cost, according to Mr. Davis' figures, will be approximately $30 million for this EIS. And I prepared a chart to synthesize based on his numbers, which I'll pass out in a minute. $22 million has been spent so far, and the $30 million total is a very disturbing figure for a couple of reasons. First of all, this is 10 times what an EIS usually costs. And I appreciate your comment that we want a competent EIS. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the cost of this EIS is exorbitant. And we don't know where that money has been spent. How, although we have a total, what was spent for studies? What was spent for consultants? I think if I sent my kid to school with $5 for lunch and he came back and said I spent $50, 10 times what I gave him, I'd want to know where was that money spent. And I think this board is entitled to know exactly where that money was spent. For context, the Department of Energy projects, they have reported that the median cost of an EIS for their large project was about $1.7 million and the average cost is $2.9 million. The Council of Environmental Quality looked in 2003, which was a while ago, but their costs were estimated $250,000 to $2 million. In today's dollars, that $2 million would be about $2.6 million. So $22 to $30 million would be a questionable figure, even if the state weren't in a recession and a budget crisis. So I asked the board to inquire where was that money spent, how much for each study, how much for the pre-application process was paid to the consultants, Dow, HDR. And to put this figure in perspective with other state costs, a $2 million travel budget for state troopers for access to rural communities was cut by the legislature in 2018. The 2017 Anchorage School District budget resulted in a net loss of 123 full-time equivalent positions to save only $7.9 million. The entire budget for infrastructure for the Denali Commission, which was doubled this year from $15 million to $30 million, supports its infrastructure projects in the rural areas. Think of the good that Ada could have done. In rural areas with that kind of money. So I request the Ada board to provide the public with a breakdown of the actual costs, expenditures made, so the public can see where this money is going at the expense of schools, rural infrastructure, trooper safety, things like that. I have this chart, which I'll pass out, and I'm out of time. I can just run through it really fast. It's pretty simple. And it's, attached to it is the page from Mr. Davis's letter. And I'll just run through it very quickly. Initially, DOTPUF got an appropriation of $9.2 million, and so that was expended, so that's in the red. Then a reimbursable services agreement from DOTPUF to ADA, $590,000. Legislative funding was $17 million, and then the governor froze $8 million of that, and that's why that little $8 million is in sort of blue. But then the governor released those monies back. And so the total expenditure, according to Mr. Davis, was $13 million, with remaining funds of $3.85 million. When you add all those up, and I used Excel to make sure the addition was right, there's $7.9 million remaining in the budget for the phase two of the EIS, which is not just the scoping process, but this is the full exploration of all the impacts and things that have come up in the scoping. So far, $22 million has been spent. and the total budgeted, if you do the remaining balance and the $22 million, is $30 million. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Nancy?
Yeah, Nancy, thank you, first of all, for coming, and thank you for being diligent. And I would say that we're going to look into this and get you some answers.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Further questions? Thank you. Anybody else in the boardroom wishing to make a comment? Seeing none, I will close the public comment section. That brings us up to item number six, prior minutes. I'll take a motion to put the minutes on the floor.
I move to approve.
Second.
All right, so does anybody have any questions?
Hello, this is Andrew McCullough.
Okay, hello?
Yes, hello, this is Edward Gooden Jr. from the native village of Kobuk. I have a question to ask. The EIS, is that for the road, not for the mine? And the tribal council members were wondering, when are you guys coming to Ambush on that Kobuk to give us an update on what's going on with the EIS?
So, Edward, this
and
is
a the road project.
Thank you for the question, Edward. If you would, if we don't have your address, or your, if you want to, the way this works, it's a comment period. We typically don't go back and forth. Corinne or John, if you could get the question from them and then send them the answer.
Yes, Chair.
So Edward, do you have a phone number that address or someone I was going to call you from the staff?
Yes, 907-948-2203.
Great. And we'll have someone from Ada staff to answer that question for you, Edward.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Okay, it brings us back to our meeting, September 19th board meeting minutes. Everybody had a chance to review those that were here. Questions, deletions, questions, changes. All right. I hear no problems with them. We'll go ahead and adopt the meeting minutes for September 19th. Item number seven, new business. First up is executive session, I guess. The subject matters will be interior energy projects, IDP, financial matters, and personnel matters. I will entertain a motion to go into executive session.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I will entertain a motion. I move the board enter as executive session to discuss confidential and financial information related to the interior energy project and financial matters and personnel matters.
Second.
Any objection? Okay, we'll move into executive session. Corinne, where are we doing?
You guys are going to be in the Aspen room.
Aspen room, all right.
While the board is in executive session, this phone will be put on mute. Thank you.
John, is there anything that we need to bring in?
You're back on the record.
Thank you, Corinne. All right, so we're back in session. I will advise that the board has not taken any formal actions on matters discussed while we're in the executive session. That brings us up on the new business item number B, IEP 2018-13 report to Alaska Legislature. John?
Item 7B is an update on the interior energy project. This time I ask Gene Terrio and his team to present.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In your package, you do have a copy of the October 20th, the quarterly report to the legislature is dated October 24th, 2018. This is the first report that was put out to the legislature where we actually turned control of the content over more to IGU. Under the statute, even though we have now sold our component of the utility for consolidation with the local utility, we have a statutory obligation under House Bill 105 to continue to present a quarterly report. In the sales document, it was clarified that would be done with IGU's supplying the bulk of the information now for us to include in the report, but that statutory obligation could not be handed off to them. We thought, since we're making this transition, that it would be good to reiterate some of the past history. So on page 2 of the report, we do have the table that came from the memo that was supplied to the ADA board at the time that we determined that we had a House Bill 105 compliant plan and project that would actually get access to the remaining funding, and actually the memorandum of September 20th, 2017 was attached to this quarterly report, again, to sort of refresh everybody's memory about where we came from now as the consolidation is taking place moving forward. The report continues to follow the items as laid out in House Bill 105, so it talks about supply, liquefaction, and so if I could just tick down through those. Supply right now, the gas supply is currently being supplied from Hillcorp. It was a gas contract that we negotiated. The duration, the short, was 3 year, had a 3 year term, and that short term was at the request of IGU that we not negotiate a supply that would shackle them. They wanted to be free to look for an alternative that might be more advantageous. The liquefaction, the financing agreement with IGU, is built around an expansion of the Titan plant. Although the IGU board currently is working with Siemens to see if there's an alternative to the planned Titan expansion, the financing is tied to that Titan expansion. At the same time, they're working with Siemens on a potential alternative. They have authorized Dan Britton to do feed work to refresh the numbers on the Titan expansion. That's information that they will need to before they move into a final investment decision on Titan expansion. We will also provide them with the information to do a head-to-head comparison with a Siemens alternative if one is developed. The rail option, we continue to be interested in the potential rail delivery to the expanded LNG storage in South Fairbanks. We also are aware that Siemens has had some preliminary discussions with the railroad as from their proposed plant, and the railroad, we know, is very interested in the freight. So that's a potential. It particularly lends itself to a benefit in the future as volume goes up higher. The railroad is really best at volume delivery. Initially, our current demand is a relatively small volume, but we certainly hope to expand that rapidly when we have the on-site storage to handle more customers. The trucking update, we did add language in there that acknowledged that with the large capacity trailers that were brought into the transportation mix, two of those trailers did suffer a breach in the dead space between the inner tank and outer tank. They were under warranty with the manufacturer, so the manufacturer did take both of those back and make repairs so that those trailers are back in the delivery fleet.
Is that a design flaw?
I believe it was determined to be a bit of a design flaw. However, it's my understanding that the similar breach was not experienced in the third trailer, just two out of the three.
Are they back in use? Are they back?
I believe they are back in use, yes. The LNG expansion on page 4, there's a picture there as the ADA board and we up in Fairbanks have toured the tank. On the next page, on page 5, it shows the crane lifting the overhead dome onto the tank. The contractors are now working in the enclosed space, welding together the enclosed nickel alloy inner tank. So the contract is advancing on schedule, and Dan has indicated to me that everything's going forward quite well. On conversions, IGU did...
James, I'm going to back up. Well, how's the budget doing?
It's my understanding, other than the soils problems that they ran into with the rest of the plant outside of the large tank, they've not experienced any other budget pressure upwards. So they're hoping that a good portion of that overage will be able to be ultimately handled with the contingency, about $2.5 million that they were carrying forward with contingency. So I know that Dan is really working, and his IG board members are very interested in making sure that they don't experience any other upward costs. On the conversions, there was discussion between the ADA board and the IGU board of getting a conversion assistant on board. They have hired that person. She presented a report to the IGU board about 2 weeks ago, I believe. Just her overview of potential federal federal programs, USDA sources of money that would be able to be brought in, some of them perhaps in conjunction with Golden Valley, because USDA is more attuned to working with electric utilities, but partnering with Golden Valley or directly with USDA to use the on-bill financing mechanism that ADA basically underwrote the expense of getting that on the statute, the PACE financing mechanism. So they do have somebody on board to specifically identify customers now, identify conversion financing mechanisms, identify potential sources of money that they can bring together to hit the ground running once an expanded supply is available. And with that, other than just to mention that although the IGU initially got started because of the cost of fuel, the community, of course, does have an air quality issue that is also driving interest in making sure that the consolidated utility is successful, not to necessarily fix the air quality problem, but to be a component of the ultimate solution to the air quality problem. Just recently, both with Siemens and I think direct discussions with Dan Britton, Golden Valley is sort of back in the mix. They do have an employee that is tasked with attending the IGU meetings. And so I think that's a result of the fact that if the community doesn't take steps towards fixing the air quality issue, stronger and stronger requirements are imposed by the EPA that really land at the doorstep of the large, you know, emitters in the community, even though they're not the creator of the particular problem. And so there are consequences that may come due to Golden Valley. And so I think they are interested in potentially being a partner in the project. And so we'll see how that works out, because certainly their demand, even if there's a seasonality to their demand, is very beneficial to consolidating the utility. It's all about volume, and the higher you can get the volume, the lower the per unit price. So with that, I'm available to answer questions.
Board members, questions?
Mr. Chairman, what's the next steps in dealing with the EPA as a non-attainment issue?
I'm not sure, to tell you the truth. I don't know which the former mayor has anything to add, but I don't want to put him on the spot. But they're working to get as much latitude from EPA as possible.
The voters took the control, local control, out of the equation. So the borough had to step out of any kind of regulatory functions. After the election, they just turned the reins over to state DEC. EPA is looking very closely at that. The borough wrapped up their stakeholder group meetings, and we were allowed to do that and then just pass that information to the state. So the state has to put together the implementation plan and send it to EPA. They're not going to have it done in time, but EPA has been bending over backwards to provide as much latitude as possible under the time constraints that we have. I think they've been more than agreeable to the extent that they're being sued for being too lenient. And so they're dealing with litigation for moving too slowly on the issue. So it's quite a can of worms at the moment.
Thank you.
Further questions?
Aren't you glad you moved out of Fairbanks?
Good place. All right, thank you, Dean.
I didn't realize that the borough gave up its deal and passed the hat.
You vote the people.
Yeah.
The voters fairly strongly suggested that we do that. Big mistake. It's going to cost millions extra money and slow the process down. It's going to get us crosswise with EPA in the long run, and their hands are pretty well tied with the Clean Air Act. You know, they understand the dynamics of all of this, but there's only so much that they can do. And unfortunately, it's going to weigh very heavily, I'm afraid, on the point sources. They're being pulled into the equation, and it's going to cost them a lot of money. And EPA realizes that they're not the problem, and forcing them to further clean up their emissions isn't really going to be helpful, and it's going to cost a lot of money, and we're going to see electric rates go up as a result of all of this. It's unfortunate, and it is rooted in the huge distrust of government in the North Pole area. Is what pushed it through.
Yeah.
We explained all these things to them, and they basically said we were lying, and none of this was going to happen. They were just going to push back and tell EPA where they could go. And we'll see how that works for them, but it's unfortunate.
Yeah. All right. John, next up is Resolution G18-14, declaring FY20 dividend to the state.
Chair, we have the presentation of the
okay,
audit financial statements.
I didn't know if you wanted to do that last or...
That's a precursor to the...
All right.
Thank you, Chair. Item 7C is a presentation on Ada's audited FY 2018 financial statements by our auditors. At this time, I asked...
I didn't see him there. There he is. Okay. He was hiding. That's why...
Ask Brenda Applegate and Mr. Vicky Schrechtler to come to the table.
You were hiding over there. I didn't see it. I thought, well, we'll just bypass that until someone shows up. Welcome.
Thank you. Honorable Board, thank you for letting me come over here for the presentation for the audited financial statements. Right now, I'm not going to take a lot of your time. I'm just going to go over the wrap-up document, which basically summarizes what we did during the audit. And with you, you should have your audited financial statements too. So hopefully you have a chance to look at the audited financial statements. But the wrap-up is what I'm going to go through. First of all, I'd like to start off by thanking all of your accounting staff and all the staff over here for helping us through the audit. Your audit is one of our tougher ones. Like it takes a lot of time to do, and there's a lot of activity going on, and there's lots of discussions with management or not regarding a lot of issues. So it's not an easy audit, and they put all the financial statements together. It's a long process, but it all gets done, and try to get it done timely. There's been hiccups with getting information from the state timely for some of the pension disclosures and amounts that needs to be booked on the financial statements. But once all of that was booked, everything got turned around pretty fast, and we're here all good at this point. So, audit wrap-up document. If we go to the first page, that. This talks about professional standards requires us to communicate with you regarding matters related to audit that, in our judgment, are significant and relevant to your responsibility in overseeing the financial statements. So then next, page 3 in there, that's like the status of the audit. We did this when the audit was still going on, but we have actually completed the audit. The first bullet point in the status of the audit, the objective of our audit was to obtain reasonable, not absolute assurance about whether the financial statements are free from material misstatements. Third line over there, the all-important line, we issued an unmodified opinion on the financial statement, which is a clean opinion. And then all records and information requested by BDO was freely available, and management cooperation was excellent throughout the whole process. Next phase, there's the results of the audit. just your significant accounting policies that is included in your financial statements on note 2, so it's actually pretty extensive. There's a lot of information there. Recently issued accounting pronouncements, GASB, which is the Government Accounting Standards Board, keeps on changing the rules, and there's a lot of new rules coming out. But those are also included in the financial statements. In FY18, you did adopt GASB 75, which is accounting and financial reporting for your post-employment benefit. So basically, a few years ago, 2015, you implemented GASB 68, which brought the pension portion of the first liability onto your books. And this year, you had to book the healthcare portion and other retiree medical portion in your books this year. So that's also reflected in the financial statements. And as a result of that, there was a restatement in opening balance. So it's your net position was restated for the amount of the liability that related to what it would have been at the end of last year. And then the other significant item in the financial statements is the Pentex Alaska was sold this year. And there's a gain booked on the books. Next phase, your significant accounting estimates. Your major significant accounting estimate is still your net pension liability and your net OPEB liability. That information is actually audited by other auditors as part of the whole state, and your information is not audited separately, but the state of Alaska Department of Administration does an allocation since you're a component of the state and gives you the amount that you need to put on your financial statements. The next item there, corrected and uncorrected misstatements. There were no corrected misstatements, so whatever management gave us, that's what's in the financial statements. There's one uncorrected misstatement, that's the same one that we've talked about in the past. Management has chosen to present the current portion of notes receivable a little bit differently than what GAAP tells you to do, but the way management books it is based on what is expected, so that's what's in the financial statements. Following that, I'm going to skip the phase after the page 7 over there talks about internal control over financial reporting, and over here we have a definition of the three buckets of control deficiencies, so any deficiencies that would cause your financials to be misstated. Really anything that would be significant deficiencies or material weaknesses, we would actually have to present that in writing to the board, and we don't have any of those. And following that, at the end of this report is the representation letter that management signs as part of the financial statements. You will also see the past adjustment we talked about in here. That's all I have for the audit report. Any questions?
Thank you. So, questions to the audit itself? Joe?
Thank you. 104 pages, a lot of detail, and most of which is required, pro forma kind of things. Obviously, the statement shows Ada in an excellent position, so issues of materiality and whatnot are easy to cover when your net assets are $1.3 billion and your unrestricted net position is $1.2 billion and your debt service ratio is 28 times, it really makes the organization look very healthy. In the and depreciation, which is part of our cash flow of another $8 million, is also something that people don't think about, that flow being available. Question that I have, and I kind of know the answer, but when we wrote off impaired $2.8 million of the North Slope pad, we also have a related entry, which is a $6.7 million gain on sale of Pentax. And they're kind of related. Originally, as I understand it, the legislature appropriated solutions for Interior Alaska Energy's challenges. And the funds that came went both to that pad as a potential source of natural gas. And so we do not connect the dots, although I think they are connected in some way. And so I'd ask you if it is appropriate to recognize, not so much in writing, but just verbally, if they are somewhat related in this this write-down of Dew Point 8 on the slope for the planning of what would have been an LNG plant. And then the gain on sale is really kind of a net story that is still positive instead of somebody focusing on one and not the other. And I would pause for a response.
I think they are connected most definitely because they are all a part of what was one project at one time, the IEP. So I think verbally you could make that connection. And, you know, we purchased Pentex as a short-term investment to help the project go forward, and the pad was an investment for the same thing. So I think you could make that verbal connection. I think that's valid, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. I'll make a comment that you know, the IGU purchase of Pentex was a separate issue in IAP. They could elect not to buy it, and ADA would then own the Fairbanks Natural Gas, Pentex, and be an ongoing operation. And at that point, they wouldn't be connected. So it's kind of interesting at the time that at the end they're connected, but in the middle, I would call it the beginning of the process, in the middle, they weren't, because it was Pentex, was a separate organization, separate operating entity, a utility, and the result of buying Pentex, which is ultimately FNG, was a result of having IGU in being a separate operating utility for a small market. And the idea was to obviously to combine the two and have local control, but there was no guarantee that was going to happen. And so I mean, it's at the end it is connected. I agree with you, Joe, that there is a connection, but it wasn't until they signed on the dotted line that you were connected.
I think you have a follow-on question, which, so again, I started by being so complimentary of such a strong organization, and I mean that. And so when I asked this question, again, if somebody would have focused on a loss on a pad, I wanted to tie the two together from a board perspective to understand how we got there. The next one is equally as challenging, if not more so. So the Mustang Operations Center and the Mustang investments, period, have separate, we'll say they're audited financial statements, but they were unsuccessful in reaching an audit opinion because of the complexities that have only been solutions arrived at after the end of our fiscal year. So we say, other than the one impairment of all of our assets and frankly very low reserve for loan loss contribution as presented in the financial statements, but we have a big issue when we consolidate our financial statements to include the Mustang unit. So there is no current impairment on the Mustang unit, and yet we're challenged in that the audit, independent audit of that firm, separate firm from you doing that audit, KPMG, was unable to get at one, and yet you were able to arrive at a conclusion that there was no impairment. So of the big challenges, and for good reason, and handled well by ADA, we have an asset that's been underperforming and that we're hoping to work out. Can you make some comments as to your agreement that there's no impairment on the Mustang unit?
Sure. That was an issue that came to basically the last minute of the audit. We've been discussing that impairment issue throughout the whole process, just because we didn't know. There are a lot of factors, and management wrote up a really good analysis, and maybe that's something that you should look at too.
It's well communicated in the notes, and yep. I want to compliment management and you on agreeing to,
yep.
to that
and,
communication.
The biggest issue with the disclaimer of opinion on the Mark 1 was the equipment value. So that's for our purposes on our side, that it's a little bit different issue because for ADA's purposes, Mark 1 is all like a cost method investment basically. So at that point, it's just like, is the cost recoverable? So based on all the information that was provided and based on the oil prices and hoping that just with the intention that the project is actually going to go forward, there's no indication as to the value being lower at this point is what we came up with. So, but if the project doesn't go through, things could change and then the impairment would be necessary at that point.
So you mentioned the equipment, but without the comment about the going concern issue that
yeah.
relates to the value of
yes.
the equipment. And so, Mr. Chairman, I would close by saying I think it's an excellent way to describe, and if any public party should be interested, I thought that, mm-hmm. and since our statements are so public, this does an excellent job of explaining a very complicated issue. And thanks for the success of management so far, fingers crossed, to keep that and to make it a going concern. But I make these comments, Mr. Chairman, because I consider this one of our major obligations as a board is to make sure that the financial statements and our duty, fiduciary duty, to review the financial statements in detail. So I thank you.
All right. Thank you, Joe. Appreciate those comments.
You mentioned GASB 75, and I think it's worth talking a little bit about how changed the financial statements. It's now like 12 pages in here or something, and there's two potential external actions that can occur that would change this accounting. And so the first one is the special funding situation that the state's currently in, where they hold the PERS participants harmless at actuarially assumed required contribution rates above 22% of payroll. And so in the financial statements, that results in the proportional share of the net pension liability for ADA instead of being $13,500,000 being $9.8 million. And so there's a $3.6 million change that could occur if the state discontinues that practice. And that holds true for OPEB as well on a similar type of basis where you're at 1 point, or the total OPEB liabilities are $2.2 million, and $600,000 of that is the state's proportional share, and again could be eliminated. The other thing that's in here that wasn't in here before is the what if the actuarial assumption about rate of return changes. And so there's a 1% up or down change to the assumed rate of return, which is currently 8% for the Alaska Retirement Management Board and the pension trusts. And so that results in a change for the ADA proportion from $9.8 million to $12.9 million, a 1% decrease. And we do kind of expect, I kind of have heard that the ARM Board is considering reducing that rate from 8% to something lower. And so it's likely that there will be an additional liability that really isn't related to any action here within the organization, but by those an external party. So that was maybe important that you know that might be coming and not be surprised.
What, Devin, is there a time frame that you anticipate the decision being made?
I'm not involved in that directly, but I wouldn't be surprised if they drop to whether it's 7.75 or 7.5 sometime in the next year, based on the kind of whispers that I've heard from down the hall. I don't know that for a fact, but I know there's a lot of pressure from both the accountancy side, those auditors, not you.
They're all the same.
But in general, because that's
Get
what other retirement funds have diminished their assumption about rate of return. And certainly the permanent fund has a lower target for their total return than the ARM Board has, even though if you look back historically, a 30-year look back does yield about an 8% rate of return. There's concerns about that being viable in the future. So,
What has it been in the last 5 years, rate of return?
The last 5 years? I'm not sure. There's been good and bad years in the last 5 years, but I would bet it's below 8%.
Below 8?
Yeah, but I would think you'd probably be in the maybe 7-ish range. Because we had a couple like...
So there's real inherent liability there. Right?
Oh, yeah, because it makes huge changes. And on the global fund basis, it makes, just on a nominal basis, and I haven't looked at this for a couple of years, but in 2016 it made, it was about a $9 billion nominal payment go to about $18
billion. Wow.
A 1% differential. So it was... So
we're probably facing that right now.
That's the future.
Yeah.
Hard to say.
Well, you better be cognizant of it.
Definitely.
That was a statewide figure that he was giving.
Yes.
Yeah, right. I agree. Yeah. But still, that's pretty daunting.
Is there any precedent of a corporation and state actually paying that off?
Well, there's no benefit to a corporation paying it off at this point because it's a shared system. And so you don't have an individual account within the PERS trust. It's just the trust. And so right now, the state is the shock absorber. So the actuarially determined contribution rate is, I don't know, 26%. Mm-hmm. So the employers all pay 22%, and the state picks up that 4%. So if it goes to 28%, the state just picks up the difference the way it's currently constructed. So if you throw in money as an employer, a participant, it just benefits the state.
How much money is in the fund today?
Again, I think the PERS and TERS is $17 billion-ish.
That's
nice. Could be wrong.
Yeah. Somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Forget about the unfunded liability right now. We're not talking about...
I was just talking about fund balance.
Right. Yeah, that's the fund balance. The bogey is between 8 and 18.
Yeah.
If we have a 1% reduction.
Yeah. Those are much bigger issues. But just for this board, I thought it was important just to be aware of it. Next year you might go, oh, what happened?
Yeah.
This number went up or down, and it wasn't anything that happened here.
Further questions of the audit from the board? Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Appreciate you.
Do you require a vote?
Not on the audit.
This board does not move to accept the audited financial statement.
We have in the past, at least not to my knowledge.
I would submit that in the future you consider that as a very appropriate measure by the board's fiduciary responsibilities to accept, but I would defer.
Well, historically they haven't, but I guess we can look at that and see.
Continuous improvement, Chair.
Well, we can do a motion right now.
I feel so strong that I would hereby move to accept the audited financial report as presented and discussed today.
Second.
Discussion? Objection? So moved. Thank you.
Thank you.
John, that brings us back to GAT-414, FY20 dividend discussion.
Item 7D, resolution number G18-14 regards the dividends being made available to the state by ADA for fiscal year 2019. Staff recommends that ADA provide a dividend of $10,285,000, which is comprised of $10 million from the revolving fund and $285,000 from the SETS fund.
Thank you. So, for discussion purposes, would I like a motion to put it on the table?
So moved.
Do you have a second?
Yes, sir.
Discussion? John, do you have anything more?
Well, with the approval of this dividend, this would put the total of dividends provided by it to the state over $400 million.
All right. And is there a discussion on the $10,200,000 as far as rationale?
And we believe that from the revolving fund, the $10 million dividend fulfills our requirements for a reasonable dividend, also fulfilling the legislation's intent that the financial integrity of ADA remains secure and able to continue business. We also believe that $10 million is a sustainable target for a dividend from the revolving fund.
Okay. All right.
Discussion, Joe?
For the public, what percentage of income does that represent as a payout? So that
yeah, certainly, of our $10,285,000 represents 31% of ADA's dividend base. So we have a calculated statutory net income number that is derived from.
Further questions from on the dividend? Hearing none, where's Fran?
I'm here.
You want to pull the board for the question?
David Commercial Paradise. Mr. Mitchell.
Yes.
Mr. Castle.
Yes.
Mr. Carl.
Yes.
Ms. Brown.
Yes.
Mr. Beadle.
Yes.
Mr. Pruth.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you, Grant. Thank you, John, and it's nice to hear that over 400 million. It's good news. Next up is director's comment number 8. I'll let you go through those.
And certainly, well, with the approval by the board, we now raise our dividend over $400 million.
There you go.
The loan dashboard and reports, development project matrices are available for your review. Also available for your review is the Callan Investment Measurement Report for the quarter ended September 30th, 2018, also available in my office. On the continuing education calendar, if board members are interested in attending a course, please contact Sherry Severson. And the next day of board meeting is scheduled for Wednesday, January 9th, 2019 at Ada's office.
So, John, I do have a question. I noticed under the loan portfolio, there's one loan that for the last 4 or 5 months at $1.6 million that shows deficient.
Yes, sir.
Can you speak to anything with the generality of that?
And let's see, we're missing our commercial loan officer, but that is in workout status. We are.
So what does that mean? First layman. Not Joe knows what that means, but us layman here.
We are continuing to discuss with the borrower the ongoing payment and being able to service the loan.
What happened?
And let's see, I would really need to bring in our commercial finance officer who is in present at the moment to provide the detail, and I'll follow up to address that.
So maybe under a confidential memo, you could inform the board at a future date?
Yes, sir.
For the January 9th meeting?
Mm-hmm.
As to the things that we talked about. All right. That brings us to item 99, board comments.
Well, first of all, I'd like to welcome the new board members. Glad to have you. And I'd like to thank the staff. A lot of moving parts. You guys had a lot of work to get done, and thank you. It's well presented. And I'm looking for miracles for the future. We've got a new administration, so I'm looking for miracles. Thank you.
Thank you, Bernie. Further discussion, board members, comments?
Yes.
Joe?
It feels like you're going around the table, which I appreciate. So several things. Just in my own history in banking, which I've been out of for this whole year and not going back into, I'm permanently retired. I just wanted to compliment on these various reports that we get from management based on finance projects and working arrangements on investments, and in particular the dashboard. And I'll call it the dashboard reports for all of the above, because we get them periodically and even before the board meeting, and it's very much appreciated. So this concept of quality and quantity and the diversity of the investment portfolio, and when I say investment portfolio, I'm including significant other activities besides the passive investment portfolio. Anyway, lots of details, And this breakdown allows us to track. And just like my experience in banking at the executive level, we get those reports, and we don't have time to go through them. And so maybe periodically, once a year, we could have somebody walk through them. And I'm sure that happens during the strategic planning. Speaking of strategic planning, I think utilizing all of the various aspects of what we get, including the financial statement, these dashboard reports, it'd be nice to use these as a future tool to say, what is the goal for every one of those assets owned? What is its own strategic plan for a shipyard or an aviation hangar or an ore terminal or whatever the case might be, that they have their own strategic plans. But again, we appreciate getting the updates because we're feeling it live as it goes. The infrastructure development, the same kind of things. And thank you again for updates on things like the Ambler Road, the Blue Crest, those kinds of things. The challenging new areas that I'm sure our governor will be looking for us, like some of these rare element metals, mining, and different things. The challenging areas like Mustang, again, we as board members, I particularly appreciate the detailed updates. Congratulations to management, staff, on the CDFA award. That is something to brag about, and I'm hoping that there's more that the press can pick up on the State of Alaska ADA's organization getting the Outstanding Distinguished Development Finance State Agency Award in the entire United States. So congratulations. I'm sure that the chair was going to say that.
I was. You just took a racket. I got my name associated with Mr. Beagle's comment.
The new administration, as Mr. Carl had already mentioned, is going to obviously present us some opportunities and some challenges. And I personally, as a board member, look forward to how we respond to them. The state has many needs. I appreciate hearing that we, as partially exempt employees of the state, are not subject to the forced resignation letter because we flow through a different process, and so do our executives. So I appreciate that keeps us whole for now. We're all subject to reappointment anyway every couple of years. So, and then finally, I really do look forward to the board orientation and to the strategic planning so that I can gain the tools to be a very good board member. And finally, just the financial statements to me are extraordinary tool as a newcomer to in a very formal way read exactly what we're responsible for. And for people that want to know, that's to me the best source, because it's survived a lot of scrutiny and third-party review. So with that, Mr. Chairman, very much appreciate the work we did and approved today.
Thank you, Joe. Charles, Wolfert, welcome to you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm very glad to be here, and I'm honored to work with such a distinguished and knowledgeable crew here. Very impressed with the staff and the information that was provided in advance of this and bringing me on board. Quite helpful in getting me going. And I do have some experience working with the staff previously also, and I've always been impressed, and I hope we keep up the good work going forward. As Mr. Carl pointed out, we do have some challenges in front of us. I don't know if it takes miracle workers, but if it does, I think we've got miracle workers here, so we can work some miracles right here for us. So I am retired officially, and there's already been a number of comments regionally oriented or project specific oriented that I might have an interest in. I obviously do have an interest in the interior of our state, but I also have a long history of understanding when I'm part of a team, we work to grow the whole pie and not focus on an individual slice of that. And I've always done that in our community, and I intend to do that as a board member here, to look statewide and get the best bang for our buck for the whole state.
state of Alaska, and I don't think you'll see any regionalism coming out of me other than me sharing maybe more in-depth regional knowledge on a specific topic. But other than that, I want to be a team player for the state. We need that going forward. I think it's critical with the way finances are going these days. So I look forward to being part of the miracle workers here. Thank you.
Thank you. Kevin?
Well, I guess I would just say I appreciate my interloper-type board representation opportunities. I think the last time I was here, the audit was also was about a year ago.
Coming just at the right time.
Yeah, exactly. And I do think you have a couple of real strong board members. I think those comments and Carl's comments have really been on point and are going to be a real asset to your organization, so that's great to see. The one thing I would plug is when I'm looking at the list of projects, the state has a private activity bond volume cap allocation that allows, and we've talked about this and you've utilized it at certain points in the past, but it's been an underutilized resource in the state of Alaska that allows a form of tax-exempt financing for certain private activity, private business projects, and so like an airport terminal type project might be eligible, a port type project might be eligible, there might be a specific exclusion for those, or they might need an allocation. It's really a bond attorney question, but I just ask, as you guys are looking at potential projects, and it really probably has to be a certain magnitude, you know, $5 million or more, because it's kind of a pain to go through that tax exempt and subject to the alternative minimum tax process, but that you just keep it in mind, because it's sad that you look at a state like California and they're fighting for private activity bond volume cap, and here in Alaska we're not using it, so an underutilized resource.
Okay. Thank you, Devin.
I want to welcome the new members and Devin, who is our ping pong member, and I want to congratulate staff on the great job you guys did with the audit and the award that you just received.
Well, again, welcome new board members, and look forward to work with you in the future. The new administration coming in, I will say that an orientation, strategic planning future discussion, we may or may not have two more new board members here in the near future, and once we get direction from that, I think we can set something up for orientation, and then for the whole board, the strategic planning in the hopefully within before the second quarter would be my goal, depending on people's schedules. You know, once summer hits, people kind of don't want to do certain things, but we try to do it a day before a board meeting so that the folks that are traveling to Anchorage, you know, they're not making two trips. So I think that's what it is. I do want to congratulate the staff on the award. I think that's great. I'd also like to congratulate you on the P&L and the actual being able to declare a dividend and going over the $400 million. I think it's a big thing. I look forward to reading about it and in a sense, not necessarily tooting our horn, but letting folks know that we are here to make a difference. And I look forward to working with this board just in that. For me, it's about making a difference in the state, and we have the tools to do it. So with that, I will take a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Second. We are adjourned. Thank you.
I've been told lunch has been delivered.